Welcome to Diverse, a Society of Women Engineers podcast. SWE gives women engineers a unique place and voice within the engineering community. On Diverse, we highlight incredible women in STEM and discover who they are at home, at work, and everywhere in between. You can find all of our episodes online at podcast.swe.org or wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Hi, I am your host, Hong Loi, and welcome to Diverse SWE Podcast. It is my privilege to be here with two fellow SWE members, Dr. Mary Isaac and Ms. Gabriella Koh, to celebrate Women's History Month, which highlights the vital role and contribution of women in American history. March is also the month that SWE shines a spotlight on the late career and retiree affinity group. All three of us are members of this important group, which offers events and programming for SWE members who are at the later stage of their careers or have moved on to more independent endeavors. This affinity group strives to provide opportunities for these members to connect and give back at the global, national, and local levels. So with that, let's meet our two guests who are living without limits and inspiring the next generation. Welcome, Dr. Mary Isaac and Ms. Gabriella Koh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you both here with us today. I wanted to start first by mentioning that you both have enjoyed long and successful careers as women engineers. Can you each share with us in your introduction about yourself the moment in your careers when you felt that you made the right choice to be an engineer? Mary, let's start with you.
Sure. There are probably many times that that happened. Even before I became an engineer, I knew that I wanted to put things together. I knew I didn't want to play with dolls. I knew I wanted to make doll furniture. So that was kind of my first clue that I was going to be an engineer. The first time that I really was confident that engineering was the right choice for me, and it happened many times through my career after that, was when I looked at my paycheck. That was the first time that I knew I made the right choice, because that was not something I was going to have to worry about for the rest of my life.
Thank you, Mary. How about you, Gabriella?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to this conversation. My name is Gabby Koh, and I'm a systems engineering fellow at Northrop Grumman. In my current role, I'm in the part of the space systems sector, where I'm focused on optimizing the software development process so that we can send working software on the space vehicles that we send into orbit. And I think I realized I made the right decision to become an engineer when I was a lieutenant in the Army Corps of Engineers. I started my career as a officer as an engineering officer in the Army Corps of Engineers upon graduating from the ROTC program, or the Reserve Officers Training Corps, from the University of Miami. And I went really from an overprotective home environment to leading an engineering unit. And I learned a lot. The time that I spent in the military really taught me a lot about leadership and how to bring people together to accomplish the mission. So working with others who share a common goal has been very rewarding for me. And it doesn't really matter where people come from, what the task is, where the task is being performed. Having that common goal can move mountains. So just a little bit of background of that time is, one of our main missions was to do rapid runway repair, which included finding out about doing an assessment of the damage of the runway, and then putting together a plan to repair it, and then executing that plan and putting the runway back into service. And other missions, and while I was a lieutenant in the Army, included also developing facilities that, you know, was directly affected the military members and their families, like building baseball fields and housing and so on. So this made me very proud to be an engineer, because I was helping, contributing to the solutions that affected others' missions, but also the military members and their families. And then putting that mission before self has really become something that I've lived throughout my career, even on my civilian career. And when I joined Northrop Grumman as a technical individual contributor, I've been performing, you know, in different projects where we develop solutions for first responders and for our military, the warfighter. And so serving those who serve has been a real privilege for me and one of the highlights of my career.
Well, thank you so much for that history, Gabriela. I'm in awe that you are also a service member of the military, and thank you very much for your service. I want to, before we go on to the next question, I want to go back a little bit with Mary. You,
because I was a little succinct, you think?
No. It's just because I knew of your history and I knew that you didn't start out as an engineer necessarily.
No, I didn't.
So I think the description of the paycheck was important, but I wanted to have our listeners learn a little bit more about that early history, which is so important and I thought was so inspiring. Mary, can you give us a little bit more?
Thanks for that, Hom. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I didn't cover anything, did I? So I was a machinist. You know, I took it from making tough furniture to making machinery. And I worked for General Electric my entire career. And I started out in Schenectady, New York, making large steam turbines and generators. And so I worked on a large lathe. And I went from there into construction because I like working with my hands. I like working with material. I like that aspect of it. So I did field engineering. I built a nuclear power plant, one of the last ones in the United States to be built up in Ohio, in Cleveland, Ohio. And then I went back and I started fixing turbines. And that's what I spent most of my career fixing, selling, servicing, taking care of, doing customer quality management, having to do with power generation equipment. And I did it all over the world. So my primary area of focus was India. And so I spent a lot of time traveling back and forth to India, met a lot of people there, and I loved going to India. It was my first opportunity to see there's a lot of people there. And, you know, you fly in on a plane and you're walking and you land and it's late at night or early in the morning. And all of a sudden you see all these bobbing heads going along and you have no idea what it is. It looks like almost like a wave motion. And as the sun comes up, you see, oh, my goodness, it's people lining the streets walking. I'm just, wow, that's amazing. So. Yeah, that there have been many times I realized it was the right thing to do. And I think when you realize you're a problem solver, that's really what you do. You solve problems. That's when it comes home, that this is really what engineering is all about.
That's where the fun stuff is. So for all the women and girls out there who are listening to Mary, who started out as machinist, and Gabby with her career in the military, and you think that some of these discussions sounds a little bit more masculine, think again. These are things that women do all the time, and it is for all of us here. So let's move on to that very succinct question about women participation in STEM, because there are a lot of people who think that it is not quite the career for them, or it may sound a little bit intimidating or scary. So women participation in STEM continues to be at less than 25% in the workforce. It's an underrepresentation that is reflected worldwide. So throughout your career, what were your experiences in meeting in other women in STEM? And how did that fuel your passion to encourage girls and women's participation? Gabby, can we start with you this time?
Sure. So let me tell you, attending college and working in a primary male-dominated industry, both in the military and as an engineer, woman engineer, has definitely presented its challenges, right? But I've had, like, for example, I've had professors who held the stereotypical view that women could not be good engineers. Where does that come from? Right. Also been in situations that, you know, I've been the only woman in the room, in the conference room, full of men, and it can feel intimidating. So but, you know, to be successful in these settings, I think, in STEM and also in any career, you need to develop beyond your technical skills. You need to develop soft skills, because this helps us understand each other, be able to be good listeners, and find a common ground. So this has been really helpful for me to find common ground and be able to communicate my thoughts, my perspective. And being the only woman in a lot of settings has fueled my, my desire and my passion to get other women in the same space, and really encourage girls, young girls, and young women to join this space, because we need diversity in the solutions that we develop. And if we are not addressing, women's perspectives in our solutions, then we're only addressing half of the problem. So I'm happy to see that there's more young women joining, the space, and specifically in engineering, because we develop, we operate all of these solutions that we are out there, right, in our daily lives, and also during, and whether it's for fun or for work. So having that diversity is important. So that's fueled my, passion to get more women into the space, and making sure that, we're changing the narrative that women cannot be in this state, in this space. There's so much knowledge transfer that can, that can occur and inspire others to be successful in STEM as women.
Mary, how do you meet other women in STEM? And how did that affect your views?
Yeah, and it's interesting, because early in my career, you're so focused on your career, you're not focused as much on building community, right? And so I was very focused on what I was doing and trying to get ahead and trying to keep my head above water. And I did not even, because there was no SWE around, I did not have that opportunity in college to have that support of other women. One other woman that I went to school with is now, she's a SWE member still, Sina Drapala. And Sina and I went to school together. And it's like, and we're still connected. And that was our support group. The two of us were our support group. We both had kids. She was married at the time. I was a single mom. And it was, we just were the only kids in the room, the only females in the room. And it was such a challenge to try and just find that strength to keep going on. And so I knew that it was going to be important for me to make other girls, younger girls, feel that they're welcome, that this is a place for them, that this is a safe place for them. And so the two of us, we ended up starting a SWE section in Schenectady, New York, in the Capital District. And then I left to go off on my career, and Sina stuck around for a while. But that was one of the things that we were both so committed to making sure that happened. And we think it's so important that girls, that we get them engaged by the time they're in middle school. Because if you don't, it took me 7 years to get back to engineering because I was not engaged early. I didn't get engaged till later in life. I was good at science. I was good at math. I was good at all those things, but my dad was an engineer, and he was also, girls can't be engineers. So you would have thought that would have been enough for me to say, I'm going to do it anyway. But it took me quite a while to get to that point where I finally went back and I said, I think like an engineer. This is the right thing for me.
Speaking of that, because you too have found what I would call advocacy, I was so inspired when I met both Mary and Gabby and learned about both of your endeavors and your projects, advocating and supporting girls and women in STEM. And you hit the nail on the head with your comment, Mary, when you said building communities become a very important thing because of our experiences, our collective experiences. Can you tell us more about your passion projects and how those came about, Mary?
Sure. So I have... My husband would tell you I have too many passion projects, and one of them is not him. So, well, he is. He's my number one, but My passion projects have kind of evolved over time. I got very heavily involved with the Society of Women Engineers when I retired early. And I ended up developing Invent It, Build It. So we did Wow, That's Engineering, and then Invent It, Build It. And so I've been with that program for the last 12 years, I think it's been going now. That was definitely a passion project at the time, and it kept me going through college. And what I would do is use these opportunities for my research, because my research in my PhD is to understand why girls don't want to be engineers. Why don't girls want to go into engineering and technology and find solutions or interventions that's going to reverse that, or that's going to correct that? And the thing that I found is community. So between SWE, and then more recently, I've been running a program here in California called Tech Trek. It was started in California at Stanford. It's a middle school program, a one-week STEM immersion camp for girls with girls. So all of the staff is female. We have people who identify as girls participate in this camp with us for a week. Each camp is about 100, and we put 900 through each year. So I've been doing that for a couple of years. That keeps me pretty busy. And then there's FIRST, robotics. And you have to, robotics. There's just not enough girls in robotics. So you have to get in there and be what you want them to be. You have to be visible to them to get them. And since we've started doing that, I am running this year, coordinating referees for our competitions, which are occurring right now. Since we've done that, we've taken it from zero referees that are female to half of our referees are female. So it's just intention. It's having intention and applying it.
And we are so glad you are doing that. And for all of our listeners who didn't quite catch what Mary just said, with all the things that you were doing, you found time to go back to school to get your PhD after retirement. So that's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, another day.
And Gabrielle, you have also a very inspiring story. Can you tell us about yours?
Well, I can tell you a little bit of background, quintessential, you know, immigrant story, right? I grew up without a lot of resources, but what I lacked in material things was made up for with mentoring from my older brother, Joe, and my mom's vision for her children to get out of the circumstances and improve themselves through education. So my brother always saw the world as his oyster, right? And then many places to explore and opportunities to gain. And he always guided me to see that there's a place to try different things, because why not? And to be somebody that I can, you know, that to be beyond, be more than just a student, and aspire to do more than just the present day, and work hard and try different things, because why not? And so through his encouragement, I felt empowered to see myself on the other side, right? With air quotes, the other side being improved through education, right? Because education broadens our horizons and creates new opportunities. But I've also had throughout my career, many mentors who have guided me and have been my cheerleaders and encouraged me to keep on going. And sadly, I lost my brother about 5 years ago to cancer. And, through the process of grieving, I kept thinking of ways to, how can I take this sad situation, really monumental situation in one's life, and turn it into a positive? So I started thinking of ways to, how can we help? How can I help myself and others? And because he and I talked about everything and nothing, and getting his perspective on a lot of the challenges that I've had throughout my life was really instrumental in me getting, seeing through those challenges. Then I, sadly, I lost my mother too, and they were both instrumental in my life. and a way for me to get through the grieving and make a negative positive, I launched Keys to the Future, which is a podcast that focuses on encouraging students, young students, and early career professionals to stay focused on their education, well, STEM journey, but most importantly, education, because education provides you opportunities, it provides you upward mobility, and so on. So I hope to inspire listeners to get, you know, to stay focused in their journeys, no matter how hard it is, get help, seek help from others such that, you know, you can get through the challenges, because STEM is hard, engineering is hard. But if you realize that you're not the only one going through the challenges and you seek help, then, you know, it's you should seek help. And so I hope that my podcast inspires people to reach out to others in their community, because the podcast can inspire you to have a second thought and say, well, why shouldn't I do that? Let me go talk to somebody in my community that can better, more tactically guide me in, you know, in the path that I'm taking. So, yeah, and it's been my passion since, I think, 2020 to continue to work on material and put material out there that can help somebody.
And did you mention in our conversation that it's on this 9th season?
Actually, I'm working on season 7, which will come out in the spring.
Wow. Season 7. And then you also mentioned that there is a scholarship that you're funding kind of related to the podcast called Key to the Future, right?
Yes, absolutely. And thanks for reminding me that, because I did start a scholarship fund through SWE that helps underrepresented communities get through the scholarship. Hopefully they are able to get them the technology that they need to get started in their journey, right? We live in a world that technology drives our lives. And if you don't have the proper equipment, such as a computer and, you know, a phone or the technology that you need to do research and do your work, then you're already starting behind. So I hope that my scholarship fund helps underrepresented communities, student communities, to be able to afford, you know, to get a good start, a head start, if you will, in getting the equipment, the proper equipment that they need.
Wow, that is really inspiring. Thank you, you both. You know, as I'm listening to both of you, there's a saying that I'm reminded of that says that life experiences open new doors. And reflecting on my own experience and situations, I always find that when I push beyond my own boundaries, and dealing with changes especially, and loss, brings personal revelation. So digging back into you, what have you learned about yourself doing these projects? Gabby, first?
Yeah, and I recently reflected on this because somebody else also posed the same question. And I can tell you that I have learned that no matter where you come from, the challenges are very similar. And, you know, through the spirit of perseverance, and that keeps fueling our goals and dreams. Also, diversity is the superpower of innovation, and we owe it to ourselves to learn from each other so that we can better our world and leave it better than where we found it. And the third thing that I'm going to mention is that continuous learning is the spark to keep thriving in life, no matter where you are and what stage of life you're in.
Thank you, Gabby. Mary, what have you learned from about yourself?
Yeah, so many things. I think the thing I've learned the most is, and recent, I would say, through my recent experiences versus ones 40 years ago, is that I'm better than I think I am. So, you know, we all have this sense that we're not as good as other people think we are or whatever. And I found that, wow, I really am good at things that I'm good at. And so take credit for that. And that's the thing that I've learned, is that I'm better at a lot of things than I thought I was. And so that's That's great to find out.
Awesome. Wow. Well, so having pursued some of these passions, and as well as your long engineering career, and maybe finding your purposes about advocacy, what advice do you have if you think back to your 40-year-old self? Now, I don't want to date anybody, about guessing anybody's ages here, but I am asking for our listeners who are approaching either late career or a stage in which they can be more independent and can pursue more independent endeavors. What advice do you have for your 40-year-old self?
For my 40-year-old self, don't sweat the small stuff. I don't know. I think, you know, probably more seriously, I think that I would tell them to start doing at 40 what you want to do at 60 or 65, or what you're, don't wait to start doing all of the things that you think, oh, I'll do that when I retire. Oh, I'll do that when, if you want to go back to school, go back to school. If you want to travel, start traveling. If you, but you need to find that passion at age 40. I had a passion and it kept me going through. And so that was what enabled me to, and I'm still passionate about it. It hasn't died off. But you have to make sure that you take the time to explore those passions as fully as you can, as early as you can. Don't wait.
Thank you so much. Gabby?
Yeah, I also second that, because like Mary said earlier, you kind of get into your own early in your early career. You get into, okay, I got to do this. I got to get this. I got to, you know, kind of, you kind of line up the different things that you have to do or you think you have to do to get to the next level and so on. But I would say surround yourself. I would tell myself, surround yourself with more women in your life that can pull you up, that can celebrate my victories, that can hold me accountable for, you know, my goals and my dreams. And don't let anyone tell you that you can do something. I mentioned earlier, you know, I had professors who thought I couldn't be an engineer. Well, here I am. I am an engineer, and if I say so myself, I've been very successful in my career. Not that it hasn't been easy, right? There have been a lot of challenges, but it's not how you deal with, it's how you deal with the challenges and how you get up from your from a fall is what really shows your character. And so I would say continue the path, stay focused and true to yourself, and don't let others influence what you think you can do.
Well, great. So that theme about building community early, as much as early as possible, continues. So that brings us to one of our final question here. We, Mary, Gabby, and I all met through the SWE Late Korean Retiree Affinity Group at SWE. So what unique perspective do you think the late career retiree engineers at SWE can bring to his members at any stage? Gabby?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think that you need community, like Mary said before, right? Form a community to thrive at all stages of life. You need to have some, you know, community around you that will see you through the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? And then just to be able to share in life. It's something that you need at all stages. But as a late career engineer, I think I can provide my experience and knowledge to help others make informed decisions, right? And learn from my lessons learned. And I really I get a lot of joy from working with our early career engineers and our early career professionals to help them. And they inspire me. They bring such a fresh energy, and they inspire me to learn, continue to learn, to continue to learn new things and form relationships. So I think it's important to keep thriving, to form community, no matter where you are in your career, whether you're early, mid, or late career. And through the SWE affinity groups, I think that one can find and build community if, you know, to seek out others like-minded individuals, right? So that you can continue to grow and thrive.
And Mary, how about you? What do you think the SWE Late Career Retiree Group contribute to the importance of the SWE community?
Mm-hmm. What she said. No. I think one of the things that is important when you think about a community, you have to have, it's almost like you have to have a churn, a certain amount of churn in the community. It can't be isolated. It can't just be the late career retirees. And then here's the middle career and here's the younger career. We have to have that continuous churn between organizations and that collaboration between the organizations so that we satisfy the whole group. To me, I think there's nothing cooler than to have kids tell me when I go to a competition, because I am late career, and I go to a competition as a referee, and they say, you're cooler than my grandma. You know, that's a good thing to have them say that. Yeah. Or, you know, my grandma is not as cool as you. So I think that those are important messages that we have to keep thinking about, that this is part of our job, is to continue to inspire. That's what SWE does. We aspire, we achieve. And so we need to continue to inspire others. And that's where I'm looking to this affinity group, that late career and early retiree, to send the message that this is something that's going to be good for you long term. Look at how happy these people are. You know, I think that that's an important message to carry across.
Absolutely. Well, I know that I would not have met either of you without the late career group.
There you go.
So in a sense, I guess it's an ecosystem that is connecting all stages of career, as well as all of us to each other, because we feed in each other's energy.
Yes.
So, you know, with that, I want to make sure that we wrap this up. And thank you both, Gabby and Mary, for all of your wonderful conversations and insights about, you know, your experience as engineers, as women in STEM, and as advocates, and sharing all your endeavors, because it is never too late for us to pursue any of these things and be role models and for each other and for other generations coming up. So with that, for anyone who's listening today and is curious about the SWE affinity groups, we have over 20 of these groups at SWE, which are designed to bring together members who share identities, interests, and goals. So check out affinity groups at SWE on .swe.org to find the full list and to discover the ones that are right for you. To get involved with the late career and retiree affinity group and see all of our upcoming events, plus find the links to join our Facebook group, sign up for our newsletter, and learn more about our volunteer subgroups, you can also visit lcrag.swe.org. I'm Hung Loi, and from all of us at SWE, thank you for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Diverse. Please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your social network. You can visit podcast.swe.org to keep up with our episodes and learn more about how the Society of Women Engineers empowers women to achieve their full potential as engineers and leaders.